Welcome to the GamesNet Berlin Europe podcast. Here, we speak with extraordinary games industry professionals and listen to their story to learn all about what they've built and who they are. GamesNet Berlin Europe is the international games industry initiative of MediaNet Berlin Brandenburg, the networking association for the media, creative and digital industries in Germany's capital region. My name is Simon Oler, and I will be your host for this program. Today, we are speaking with Marie Majorwell. Originally from Sweden, she is based in Berlin and is running her own business as an advisor and consultant for the games industry. She's had a prolific career run as a game director, spanning across companies like Warner Brothers Games, Eidos, Capcom, Jagex, Jaeger, and Ubisoft. But not everything was always easy for Marie. She has an impressive rags-to-riches story. On her own from age 17, she worked back-to-back jobs at a gas station and Burger King to pay the bills. Only 4 years later, at age 21, she was a host on Swedish morning TV discussing games and tech. Another big dream she had was entering the AAA games industry. And in both that case and in the TV story, we hear about her bold moves to actually reach these goals. And we also, and that has something to do with it as well, talk about living life like Forrest Gump, which is being in the right place at the right time. And we also talk about natural working rhythms as a freelancer or a self-employed person, and to be honest, much more. Many amazing stories, so we hope you can sit back, relax, and enjoy our conversation with Marie Majorwell.
Hello and welcome to the GamesNet Berlin Europe podcast. Our guest today is Marie Majorwell. How are you today, Marie?
Hello, hello. I'm doing fine, thank you. Nice to be here.
Co-host, as always, is Simon. How are you today?
Good day, ladies and gentlemen. Very fine, thank you very much.
And I'm Florian, as always, co-hosting together with Simon. Marie has recently started her own business as a consultant in the games industry here in Berlin. She moved here during the pandemic and has worked for several companies, for example, Jaeger. But before coming here, she has spent time in Sweden and Canada in numerous companies and projects. She has also always been active in esports. She's played Counter-Strike from 1.0 and turned that into working with DreamHack since the very early days. What brought her to Berlin? What keeps her in Berlin? What is Marie up to? We will find out straight from her. Marie, tell us what's important to you at the moment.
Oh, there's so many things that are important, you know, just things that are important to me. There's things that aren't that I care about in the world. It's like for me, I guess what's important is to get my business fully up and running and understand kind of what are my routines. Because the difference from having your company to just working for a company is that you also need to assume these other roles that, you know, administrative people used to do for you, whether mm-hmm. to figure out my insurances, to figure out my taxes, you know, how to bail people, a couple of those things, but then also how to always be on the outlook for new clients. Meanwhile, as you're doing the actual work to close down the ones you have and making sure you're sending your invoices. So like that whole routine and that structure and to like balance your, you know, the different parts of your brain and in at any given time, be on top of all these things. It's quite a learning experience, I would say.
Yeah, so you are at the start of a very interesting journey, like something new in your life. But I think from like doing our research on what you've been up to and from the info you sent us over, I would describe your whole life sort of as a journey because it's... We introduce people here on the podcast usually with like a list of things that they'd already done, but I decided against it because like your list would be half of the podcast.
It's too long, man. It's yeah. too much.
And so we will just dive in somewhere where my first thing is we will get back to some of the points in your life, in your career, where you've been and what brought you there. But at the moment, what's interesting to me is, what made you choose to go like solo or do your own thing right at this moment?
I think, you know, a lot of people always ask me in my life, oh, you're so brave, you did this, you did this. For example, I left Sweden, people like, oh wow, you're so brave, you moved to another country. And it's kind of like the answer will be the same. Like in that part, in that regard, it was a necessity. And I think also for me to start my own business was a necessity, because I worked for students for a long time, and I kind of felt that I hit the point where the next step would be to be a founder of something. And I did I've had a couple of offers also to do found studios, but in the end I realized that I wanna be able to do more, and I wanna be more free. Like when you get into the games industry, you have to be really good at this one thing and carry your own weight in one thing. And for me, like there's only so few entry funnels, or it used to be at least. So for me that was programming. I actually wanted to be a designer. But I had to go through a funnel where I could carry my own weight. So I became a programmer and I kind of went through that. But doing so, you're kind of limiting all your other qualities and all your other talents. So for me, like I have this, you know, I usually speak about different driving forces, you know, like what gives you energy more or less. For some people, it's drawing. For me, I like the stimulating and logical challenge of tech, and I do get that from doing design as well. I like, I'm a bit organized and tidy, so I kind of, you know, I don't want to say that I have OCD, but I like to be structured. And then I really like just public speaking is actually the thing, you know, like a couple of things that I have done in my past, like, you know, I've been in a TV show, I've been on morning TV, I used to be on stage at DreamHack, I've been an esports caster, right? And so this is something that I haven't been able to fully do in most of my jobs. When I was working at Jagex, I was the official spokesperson for diversity and inclusion, so that might be the exception. But otherwise, I just felt like as a person, you know, looking at all my talents and stuff, there's more that I want to do in my life, and it's sometimes really hard to do when you're a game studio and you have a kind of defined role that you shouldn't really walk too far from.
Yeah, you can kind of do whatever, right?
It's great. I can do whatever.
and what would you say?
I can say yes to everything. It's amazing.
yeah. Okay. And so I was wondering, what's your business then? Like you said you're an advisor first and foremost. So you speak to people mostly, probably. Do you want to describe a little bit what that is?
Yeah, so when I first started to be like, okay, I'm on my own, what do I do? And then I kind of looked at my talent, how it can apply. And I came up with like 10 different things. And it was really hard for anyone to understand what I really did, because I was like, oh, but I can do this, or this, or this, or this. So I figured out I'll have to scale down and focus on a couple of more, a little bit less is more, and try to explain them in a more cohesive package. So what I do, I call myself an advisor. And within that, I help both studios and publishers, who I thought would be my main customers, to help them with their, you know, help studios with their games and help publishers to do the due diligence in the games. But actually I do work, you know, with one studio so far. Oh wait, no, two more incoming. But I also noticed that, you know, your clients are not always the clients that you expected, because I've had governments approach me to help them, you know, like be the jury in their funding program. I've had incubators come, hey, can you come here and coach our little indie teams that we have? I have a school, hey, coming saying, hey, can you do like some seminars and workshops for us? So, and even some investors, and then tech companies who make products for games, like a animation tech company, for example. And they're like, you know, they also want my advice, because I've just been in games and I've been in esports a long time, and I've seen the whole chain, and I know how things work. So there's, yeah, I keep my options a little bit open, but I call myself an advisor mostly. And I also do, of course, some hosting and speaking on the side, which I think is very, very exciting and fun.
So you mentioned that you are, when you want to join the games industry, or when you, I think there's, to be fair, I think there's different like variations in terms of like the requirements when you come to the games industry, because let's say you start very early with indie development and everything, then usually people wear many hats. And so it's more common for people to have different roles. But like the industry in that sense, what you're talking about is like specifically AAA, and you've worked with numerous studios and publishers in the AAA industry. You mentioned a few ones. We also have Eidos, Funcom, Warner Brother Games, just to name a few more from the list.
Yeah.
And since the list is so long, we might not be able to like get into the detail of what each of them entailed and like what you did there. But it's really interesting to me that because we often ask people like, what brought you into the industry or like, how was your path?
Yeah.
Can you tell us a little bit about what made you want to come into games and like how you decided that, oh, I need to be good at that thing and I want this specific thing in games?
Yeah, so I remember these things fairly vividly, actually. When I was 5 years old, my dad got us a Famicom, which is the Japanese version of Nintendo 8-bit that was released in Japan 2 years prior, 1983. And I fell in love in games there and then, and it's never, since that moment, it just hasn't been anything else. And when I was 7 years old, I opened my first PC Gamer magazine, and I'm like, wow, you can work with this, you know, like I can work with games. And that became more or less of a dream, I'd say. You know, the IT industry was going a little bit bad for a while. I started studying architecture, but all in all paths always kind of put me back into games. And first I was in esports for a long time. That didn't really pay. It wasn't even a viable career plan at the time. So I'm not sure even no one was working esports. But I tried to be a reviewer for a bit. I was on a TV show for a little bit, but none of these things really paid the bills. So I figured eventually the game development became my thing. And then I needed to figure out, okay, how do I become a game developer? This is the only viable career. And then this one day, I think it was a fall day in Sweden at workers' fair that was being arranged by my university, where the different companies in Stockholm, tech companies, would come and talk to the tech student, basically. And they had a guy there from DICE, some EA DICE, who's called Mikael Kalms. And I just went up to him and spoke to him, and I'm like, what can you be in a game studio? And he told me, like, okay, well, you can be like a product manager if you're, you know, if you have like some sort of business degree or project management degree. I'm like, okay, no. And then he said, you can be a tester if you're good with that. And I had heard some bad things about testers. Like at the time, they had a rumor that it was a dead end for your career, which is not true today.
Mm-hmm.
And then they said, you can be a level designer if you can build worlds. I'm like, I didn't even understand what that meant. Honestly, I've never seen a level editor or anything like that. And then they say you can be an artist if you're good with drawing. I'm like, yeah, no, really, you know, I do some calligraphy, but that's about it. And then he said you can be a designer. I'm like, oh! But then he said, oh, but no one really just becomes a designer. It's usually an artist or like a programmer who then transitions to design, because there were no design educations like back then. This is 15 years ago, you know. And then he said, well, you can be a programmer. Like, programmer, I like programming, you know. I'd done my first websites and a couple of things like that. I was studying like Java in school and stuff. So I'm like, and I was very good with mathematics, actually, very logical person. So I'm like, okay, I can be a programmer and then a designer. So that's kind of when I set the outlook for my career. And then it took me a bit, but eventually I did transition to design. And from there on, it's just been kind of going up, I would say, upwards to senior designer, lead designer, associate director, yeah, and so on.
Mm-hmm. I'm always kind of jealous in a way when I talk to people who grew up in Sweden and have a connection to games, just because, like, from visiting conferences over the last decade that I've been working in this, and then just like hearing people on stage describing like what made Sweden so strong in game development, and like this whole plan by the government to have personal PCs in everybody's home. And so this very early adoption of, well, yes, you play games sort of on the side, but you also immediately understand like the opportunities that come with it. So you have so many talented people in programming and designing, then of course from that path. And like, also the business sense that is in Sweden with the games industry. As a little aside, we have even events here in Berlin hosted by the Swedish government, where they were discussing why is Sweden, which is a very successful company in game development and in the industry, buying so many Berlin-based companies or German-based companies. So, I mean, the progress that has been made there before, like, you will find people in Germany who have a long-standing history, but like the difference in like how many people there are between Sweden and Germany is just insane to me. And that thing that you even started, you played esports and were in a scene in Sweden at a point where that was like such a small thing in Germany that you couldn't even think really about that as what today would be esports. That's just insane. So I always like envy that a little bit. Mm-hmm. How do you see now? I mean, you decided to stay in Berlin for the moment.
Yeah.
How do you see Berlin compared to Sweden? Maybe in terms, of course, different times from back then, obviously, but like now, what made you stay in Berlin, have your business here?
Yeah, I want to start off just by throwing a little bit, I will answer your question. I'll throw a little bit more light on the Swedish game industry because, as you said, we did have in the 90s, the government is like, you know what, if you guys want to buy a computer, you just take it off the taxes, more or less, and it's almost free. It was, or at least you got a big contribution. I'm not sure how much they paid. It was a third or something like that. But that really helped. But there's two other things that I think actually have contributed, and one is that we early on in Sweden we went into the kind of Dungeons and Dragons scene. Like we have a really old book called Drakar and Demoner, so the kind of role play community underground existed for a very, very long time. For example, LARPing has also is an expression of that that's also been big in Sweden for a long time. That's the one thing. And the other thing with Sweden is really good with grassroots organizing, and the state has really good structure and programs for basically youth or anyone just organizing in their spare time and be able to apply to get some sort of funding, small funding, but something from the state in order to kind of do that and keep that up and to register themselves in different databases. So I think that also has a part of it of why eventually these two things merge into the demo scene, where you had like young Swedes smoking joints, you know, in their late teenage years, coding tech demos on Amigas, you know, like there's a couple of legendary kind of groups out there who still go to these demo parties, and they really lay the foundation of the Swedish game industry. So I think it was all these three things combined, both with the computer and then with the organization of it all, and then with the role play culture. But back, coming back to your actual question, why did I decide to stay in Berlin? Well, you know, I thought about going back to Sweden, and there is a lot of stuff happening in Sweden. You know, if I just walk downtown for like 3 hours, I will bump into someone in the games industry who I know, and probably five people that I didn't know because they started after I left, more or less. But Berlin is pretty good in terms of what the state also is able to fund and the state is able to offer. If you can get through the bureaucracy, and there are a lot of expat resources out there and a lot of people that specialize in getting you through the bureaucracy, the German state is pretty supportive, I'd say. But most of all, for me, like Berlin has such a strategical location, whereas I already have a really strong network in Sweden. I don't really need to live there to be able to do so. The people that I knew back then, you know, they're GMs and CEOs of their own studios today. So for me, Berlin is a way to expand my network, get closer also to a lot of indies. But I can just take the train to France if I wanted, to Austria if I wanted. It has such a strategical place right in the middle of Europe, and I live just next to the main train station. So it really works well for me in terms of that. And of course, I just also returned from Gamescom, and there's the Summerfest and a couple of events that you're actually organizing, Florian, you know? So, you know, you keep giving me reasons to stay here in Berlin, I'd say.
That's the best answer I've heard to this question in this podcast so far. Yeah, actually, true. I was thinking right now, like, how we met, but it was definitely through MediaNet, through an event. I think our first event, actually our first in-person event that we did after the pandemic. So, we arrived, I think, pretty at a similar, point. I came here in October 2020. So yeah, without like going into super bleak details, but I mean, we, in our intro, we heard a little cat meow in the background. So what kept you afloat in Berlin during those first months? Because for me, I was like at a point where I thought, well, I'm not sure if Berlin is really for me, because it doesn't really matter if I'm here.
Right. I had a similar kind of feeling earlier on. So I actually came not during the pandemic, but a week and a half before the lockdown, which is, you know, like a little bit, I could kind of see it and taste. I got to walk the streets and I could see all the posters for all the summer festivals that would then get canceled. So I got all excited for nothing. And then it kind of went from there to not walking outside for 2 weeks, or, you know, scared that the police would kind of get you and question you, the German police, like, do you have a reason? Do you have a valid reason for being outside? More or less. And only going grocery shopping and then covering your whole face and nose and body and everything, right? Mm. So it was miserable. I'm not going to lie. It was really miserable. I will say, there's a long story that I'm not going to get into, but for reasons, I only had my cats, my phone, and my old Famicom. My old revived Famicom. I call it my revived dead wife that I've carried with me all life, that now magically has been revived in, you know, it's a long story, as I said. But the cats definitely helped. Like, I got another cat just a couple of months before COVID, and they've been kind of, there's been a really interesting dynamic. One of them is really old, one of them is really young, and they keep chasing, and, you know, they hate each other, but then they love each other. And so that's been filling some void that I haven't gone crazy. But then I've actually had on my, you know, and of course it was my Famicom that I could play, which was cool for a bit. But then on my phone, I discovered actually an online karaoke community from a YouTube ad. And so, with that, I was able to do something called live jam, which is when you're having a live karaoke room by camera, by voice, with people from across the world. And you can sing a duet with someone in Indonesia or someone in California, you know, and you can kind of have that human connection. And that really helped me, so to the point that I redid my whole schedule to North American hours so that I can kind of be there and connect and sing with the people when they were live.
Yeah, amazing. And whenever we meet at an event, which luckily is more often now, again, I think that without fail, you will at one point ask me or tell me that there's some karaoke going on at some point in the next days or in that evening, like if I want to join. So far, I haven't done yet, but at one point, like, you will get me there. You will get me there.
I almost got dear Astrid from game.de, ones who organized game. I almost got her to karaoke, but the taxi they were in decided to kind of cancel the ride because there was some Uber mix-up or whatever. I don't know. So it didn't end up happening. But I did just get a video a couple of hours ago from Gamescom that happened last week. When, you know, always when there's a Nordic, a game conference in the Nordics, or if there's a Nordic party at an international games convention, there will be the karaoke that my friend Stay Curran drives together with a group of amazing people. And what they do is they take lyrics from famous video games or events in the game industry, and they put them instead of the original lyrics in famous songs. So, for example, I sang I'd Do Anything for Love, But I Won't Do That by Meatloaf. Yes. But it was called, but it was all about Minecraft and Notch selling Minecraft. And it's like, I'll do anything like that for love, but I won't Minecraft anymore. You know, it was, yep, it was pretty dramatic. And last time when I was hosting Nordic Game, I sang up something about, I think Remedy and Alan Wake. And yeah, it was Max Payne. And it was a lot of fun. It's always a lot of fun. Shout out to Stay in the Mario community. They're doing a great job.
Really cool. Let's jump back a little bit. We started talking about like what brought you into the industry. And then obviously, as we mentioned, you have this long list of companies that you worked for. So can you like start leading us a little bit through your like first stations, like real jobs in the industry, and then what made you move on or how that whole thing unfolded?
So, even I graduated somewhere around 2008, right? And from there on, I, you know, I had my programming degree finally, and I looked at these game studios. And what I saw there was that in the big crisis there, a game studio called Grin, they closed their doors. Avalanche, makers of Just Cause, they had to let go of half their staff, and EA DICE froze all hiring. So it was pretty much a wall, I'd say, of banging my head against this game industry for a few years really before things started opening up again. And also back in the days, there was a big discrepancy from what you learned from school versus what they wanted at a game studio, because there were no game specific educations or almost none at the time. So I just went that regular computer science education, even though I, you know, was a student, so to say. Most of the questions on the different programming tests for to join a company, I'd never even heard about, you know, so there was no way I could answer them correctly. I could just kind of guess my way there. So it was tricky, and I had to work myself up. I started with a job in programming, and then I was lucky enough to have an internship working for IBM in San Jose, California. And they were doing a project about Second Life, so the OG Metaverse. This is like back in 2008 or something like that. And I did that for a couple of months. I moved to California. That was really fun. I learned a lot. I got a couple really good friends for life, actually some that I met last week. There was a lot of Germans there for some reason. They had some exchange program. But anyway, and that really helped me to give me a little bit edge on moving forward, but it still wasn't enough for me to get into the games industry. And I actually made a folder of all these questions that I was even ever asked at programming interviews. And I just figured out all the answers, and I just kept building on my folder. And whilst trying to, you know, get a job in AAA, I started working. I was part of a competition called Swedish Game Awards, which is the biggest competition of its kind in the Nordic, maybe even, I'm not sure, in the world or in Europe, where kind of students come together in a one-year program and they make a game, and then, you know, there's a jury and different awards and stuff. And that everyone in Stockholm and Sweden knows about this. So it was really big. And my group had about 20 people, whereas half people were there full time, or half people, we were still students. So half people were still, I extended my studies to take an extra course that was like make a project in IT, more or less, that we all took. So we were kind of studying half time and doing this half time. And we got our game out there, but sadly we didn't have enough environment artists. So our last level was all like white box, so you know, we didn't win, but I learned a lot, and I got some really good friends, so that was cool. And I got a lot of and many of the people who were then in the jury are now my friends as well, so it gave me a couple of connections in the game industry too. After that, I did my thesis in online poker at BWIN, which is something that I felt gave me I couldn't get into the game industry yet, but it would inch me closer. You know, that was my tactic. If I can't go there, where can I go that is, you know, helping me to get there later? So I wanted to get closer to my goals. And then after that, I worked for...
I have a quick in-between question.
Yeah.
I just got curious. So you basically went into gambling instead of gaming. Is that right? Ooh. Can we call it gambling? Is that the correct term?
I would call it gambling. Not everyone spends a lot of money. You know, I remember they used to divide them into excitement players and entertainment players. And the excitement players are the ones who want to gamble, and they will put the big money because they want to win. I think in mobile games they're called the whales. If they put a lot of money in. And then we had entertainment players. They're not really there for the gamble. They're just kind of there to be entertained, you know, to put the minimum kind of bet and just kind of see what happens on screen.
Okay.
And
I guess my question would be, at the time, was that also a personal interest of yours or something? I remember a little bit that I think probably around that time, if I got the timing right, that must have been like 2011 roundabout.
That's pretty much.
Was like a big overlap between like poker players and StarCraft players. So I was on Team Liquid a lot, and all the StarCraft players were like talking about poker, and there was also this kind of vibe there that people were interested in some sort of like independent income, you know, and kind of like.
Yeah.
Playing video games as an income used to be like this really big dream, which of course has become a big reality now. And then also playing poker for money was a big dream because some people made it reality that they really like went into online poker playing, you know, 8-12 tables and just earning a living by playing poker well enough. And then of course we have the overlap people like Elky, who's a very famous esports player, coming from StarCraft and a very famous poker player, and so on and so on. So I was just curious what your connection to that was.
There are also in Sweden and such a couple of connecting points between poker and esports. Like one less spoken about fact is, I think, Potty, who was the founder of Ninjas in Pyjamas back in the days. He was a poker player, I think, for a year or two there or something like that. And as you say, also the more strategical ones, the ones who are more mathematically minded, they definitely had a chance. I think also the another one of my acquaintances, Marcus Huber, he's the owner of ES Portal. So like they do, it's a platform for tournaments and stuff in Sweden, well, on an online platform for anyone, I guess. I think he also was investing in kind of casino in that area, if I'm not mistaken, you know, early on. So there are a couple of connections there, but I didn't really have an interest for me. I felt bad about the people who did it and they lost their money into addiction. And I felt like, you know, I'm going to try to make these games for the people who actually enjoy them and who actually really appreciate them. And that's the mindset that I had. But I more or less worked there until I had enough experience to kind of take me further to finally get me the job that I wanted.
Yeah, so you really took it as a stepping stone. If you take like the B and the L out of gambling, you get gaming, right? So...
Yes, but the thing is, for things, there was the law in Sweden for like saying that it's a lottery or whatnot skill game. Like to be able to get the license, we had to make it that you couldn't use any skill. No skill could be involved, which is kind of counterintuitive from what game is, if you ask me.
Yeah. But it did work. So what happened after? Please continue. You get closer, right?
Yeah. So we actually, I recently came full circle, and I'll tell you guys how. So I wanted to get into AAA, and I kept applying for these companies, and I had my little folder of programming questions. And eventually, you know, I was able to break through. And I also wanted to get out of Sweden, I would say, because I'd been there banging my head against the industry for years at that point, and I still couldn't kind of get into AAA. And also having lived in the US, I was kind of bitten by life and opportunity and just felt there's so much more out there. And I felt like I outgrew Stockholm because I'd lived there my whole life, you know, more than like 20-ish more years at the point. So I really wanted to move on. And I managed to convince my casino employer to pay me a trip to go to GDC Europe in 2012. And this is the event that is now known as GameCom, that is the days before Gamescom. And I said it was for educational, and no one else seemed to really know much or care much about it. My managers just approved it straight off, and I'm like, okay, cool. And I was totally using all that time to network and try to, you know, find ways to get into the industry. And I remember very clearly when I tried to get in contact with these international companies, right, who worked in AAA. And I walked up on the Gamescom show floor, you know, where there's like 100,000 different happy gamers who are not even working in the game industry. I walked aside those, and I walked up to the booth of Warner Brothers Montreal, which I knew nothing about, and only that they worked on like Batman Ark or Armored Edition for Nintendo Wii U or something like this. And then I asked, hey, is there anyone from the studio here, from the dev team? Because there was usually just a lot of marketing people, or a lot of locally hired people there. And they said, oh, not now, but that would be Kelly or this other person, but they're not here right now. Come and check later. I'm like, okay. And then I went there a little bit later, and I asked, hey, is Kelly here? You know? And they're like, oh, Kelly, no, she's not here, but she's probably in the business lounge. She left not long ago. You know, if you want, I can take you to her. I'm like, yeah, sure. And then this guy kind of walks me, and he said, wait, can you enter the business lounge? I'm like, of course, because I had the GDC Europe pass. So, you know, you get the complimentary access to the Gamescom business lounge. So he takes me in. And then as he's walking, he's kind of closing into the Warner booth, which is, you know, they build this kind of mini house. If anyone's been to a business lounge or the game convention, but they built like a little mini house inside the convention floor. Yep. Where you can kind of, you know, walk in if you work at the studio or if you have a meeting with someone at the studio. So he walked up there and he's like, so did you like have a meeting with her, you know, or something? I'm like, no, I'm just kind of interested in working for her studio. And saying that, I kind of felt like this is whole thing just slipping away from me. And then he's like, do you have a card? I'm like, yes. And then I gave him, lo and behold, I had a business card. Get your business cards, everyone out there. Man, my friend Masao, he just wrote on Twitter today. He's like, I need business cards. I'm like, I've had them there and then when I needed them. And I gave him my business card and he's like, wait here. And he walked into the booth and then, you know, for a minute. And then he came back and he's like, she's busy in a meeting. And, you know, expect that, of course, she doesn't want to talk to this random person, you know. I gave her your card and she said she'll get back to you. I'm like, in my head, I'm like, yeah, sure. And I said, yeah, thank you so much. You know, that's fine. You know, enjoy your event. You know, and then I kind of left. And I never thought in a million years that I would hear back from them. Like, not a chance. But then, like 3 months later or something, like, lo and behold, I get like a call. You know, this is like, if I get a phone call from the recruitment department and a girl there, but like, whoa, no way. And somehow I was lucky enough through these 5 interviews with different people to know the questions that they asked because I had my folder next to me because they called me and it wasn't an on-site. And so I could just scroll in my little folder and I was able to nail it. And I, by the way, I think this programming interviews are stupid. And we keep putting new people through them just because we had to go through them because we don't have any other model. But they ask you questions that you need to memorize and know stuff that any engine has a function for that you will be able to look up. So it's really not like the programming interviews that used to be. They really do not mimic a work situation. So they're not very representative. But anyway, I made it through finally and I was supposed to work on like a smaller product that they had with Lego. I think it was announced. It was called Lego Chima, but it was put on hold for different reasons. And then they called me later on and said, well, it's on hold. I'm like, whoops. And then they said, so instead you get to work on Batman Arkham Origins. I'm like, what? which is crazy because I was such a fan. I love Batman Arkham City, you know, I still played it on my PS3. So I'm like, that was crazy. And I remember just like putting on like my favorite game music. It's a song called Dearly Beloved by Yoko Shimomura from Kingdom Hearts, and opening a bottle of wine and eating some chocolate and lying down crying on the floor because, you know what? I was into AAA.
Nice. What I find so funny is like when you're telling the story of like how you started in gambling and then you snuck your way in that to that like meeting that didn't happen, but then they called you. I was like, I have these Forrest Gump vibes in my head, like where he's always at that moment in time when something like monumental is happening in the movie. Weird reference right now, but I was like, yeah. So Marie is the one like Warner Brothers at that moment figured out that they would implement loot boxes at one point, and so Marie was there at that moment. She had that interview when gambling was introduced into our industry, which is nobody will admit, but of course.
I'm not. This is not my fault. I didn't do it, guys. Don't listen to him. I have nothing to do with this.
So nice. My question is. Because this is a very amazing story and very unlikely.
Wait. Sorry. Can I add? I forgot to tell you guys the full circle thing. I just went to Gamescom last week, and I came back after 10 years, my first time going to Gamescom, and I also actually visited the Warner Bros. Booth when they're showing the Gotham Knights, and I tried their little thing. But this time when I returned, I was on the live stream, interviewed for 30 minutes. I had one talk about game design myself, and I had one panel about esport broadcast at a breakfast event by Esport Insider. And I was on the main stage hosting a fireside chat with the makers of Kings of Fighters, an old Evo game from the 90s that keep going. So, you know, I feel like I returned like a champ in my 10-year anniversary, and I kind of went full circle.
Yes.
Congrats.
Congrats indeed.
Thank you. Yeah, it feels good. It feels good.
My question was, like I said, it's an amazing story and indeed very movie-esque. And to me, I always find it amazing when people are like so goal oriented. And you were, throughout the story, you were saying, yeah, I want to get into AAA. And I was wondering where this goal was coming from, or how you could hold it so strongly, because I feel like to make these type of moves to like cold apply at a trade fair booth, I mean, it takes a degree of conviction, desperation, incredibly strongly hold goal setting.
Yeah.
You know, what is behind that? Because that's really a very, mighty move.
Mm-hmm. Well, I guess there's a couple of things behind it. One is my little restlessness. You know, I wanted to get out of Sweden. I really wanted to get out of Sweden. I really wanted to grow was one part. But then, like, I'm a person who always moves forward, I would say, not backwards, always forwards and onwards. And I think that's the only really thing that I had to cling on to in my life right then was the kind of dream that, you know, my career goal. And it's so kind of where I focused all my energy, because I didn't have a lot of other things going for me in my life right then. So this became like my sole purpose and goal, I'd say. And I think that where it was born was probably when I was four or so, we started saving, or maybe when I was six, I don't know, when I was really young, I started saving money in a little fund that really increased really well, a lot. And I mean, my dad could see my interest really early on. So he had a little bit more money, and he bought me, you know, with my money and his money, we bought my first computer. And this is Siemens Nixdorf with 286 megahertz CPU processor. back yeah. in 97, 90s or something like that. And it had a game called Mode Racer, good old like arcadey racing game. Still my favorite racing game.
Wait, which game is that?
Motor Racer.
The bicycle game?
Yeah.
The motorcycle amazing. Game. Oh my God. I love that game.
Yeah.
It has the best shattering glass sound ever at the beginning of the
that
game.
That too. Yeah. And it had a couple of good things. And then they also had Tomb Raider 2. But it was, but what I didn't know, and these were pre-installed on the computer when I bought it, but I didn't know that they were kind of cracked. So even like the motor race, like, you know, when I got to like the fifth level, so it said like, you know, like you need to buy a genuine license from the game or something like that, and it wouldn't let me progress. Or it was just showing that warning to be obnoxious. I don't remember. And Tomb Raider 2, like there was a couple levels where there was like some white box elements and stuff. So, you know, it wasn't like the best cracking stuff in back then. And I didn't even know they weren't legal. I mean, I didn't really understand the concept because I was really just a kid. But I think that to go back to your question, I wanted to make the games that I played. Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's it.
That makes sense. And is this maybe a good time to go back a little bit? Because you were telling us a little bit about how you grew up. You mentioned the Famicom, you mentioned the Siemens and the original games. And I heard you mention in your answer just now that you were, you know, moving a lot in your career. I think that also applies a bit to your life and this kind of going forwards, never back. Do you want to tell us that story a little bit, how that may have influenced, you know, maybe also your decision now to become like a very free agent, to have more agency in the world? That's just an assumption, but maybe you want to tell us a little bit about that, about like your motivation.
Oh, it's you know, there's so many different aspects of growing up in my story and decisions that I've taken. I think everything you learn in life kind of puts it's somewhere in the bank of your brain, and it can influence what choices you do and what decisions you make. But for me, like I've been on my own pretty much since I was 17, and I never really had a kind of financial runway and stability. So I've always been kind of forced to move forward, and I've been kind of forced to take the opportunities that happened or adapt to the situations that happened. And I also had a lot to learn still about from being a teenager to becoming like a professional. You know, there's quite the step in there that I had to kind of learn along the way as I was working. So, for example, when I was 17, I was working full time. I was studying full time, and I had a job both at a gas station and a Burger King to kind of just pay my rent and find my way forward. So I've always been the kind of survivor who more or less figures it out from where I am, from the opportunities at hand and from the situations that are there. So it's been quite a journey, you know, and it's been very interesting. And I think like all in all, that has helped my independence. So, you know, if you're, even when I was 21, I think when I was in the TV show every week talking about games in Sweden, I had to, you know, I needed some income. So I had to start my own company in Sweden. That was really easy to do, actually. I was this is in 2008. I just went on the Swedish website for the tax authority, and I just started my company in less than an hour, and it was all free. And then I had my codes and everything. Still here in Germany, this process takes, by the way, 2 weeks or 3 weeks, about, you know, 15 years later. But either way, so I'd done that, and having to do that for the first time and kind of learning and finding your way, that helps me now to make it easier this time. But most of all, what I think that I learned throughout all this process early on is to ask for help. Mm-hmm. And that's something that I do very much, because I ask people for help, and I try to return the favor later on. And it's something that I always keep doing, so to say. And it's really helped me going forward.
Something that interests me when I talk to people like you, let's say, is you can have that as a like as literal or as personal question as you like and go into it. But at some point in my life, I just there was some trigger, and it's hard for me to pinpoint it, but at some point something in my brain switched and I realized that each challenge is an opportunity. And so like my whole approach to life basically changed with that, like, understanding of like, I'm not afraid of next challenge X. I'm not afraid to move place Y, because each time something will come along that makes each previous like experience worthwhile, and then I can build on that. So I'm always curious, like, if people can pinpoint sort of like a trigger, or how people who, I mean, you say you were basically forced to move, but like how you get around that feeling of, well, I need to get out of my comfort zone. I need to go somewhere. I need to do something in terms of, or in comparison to, I actually want to do this. Whatever comes next will be super cool. I'm bored here now, because this has been something that came quite late for me, but I think people like you had that for a very long time.
I think there's always the two aspects of it. Like you say, like, one is I really needed to leave Sweden because I felt like I was raw and I was stagnating. And like, I'm the kind of person, I also do a lot of backpacking, by the way, because I like new experiences. Like, I get my energy from new experiences and new types of stimulation. And whereas doing the same thing for me for way too long, and, you know, with the same place, the same people, the same activity, like, if it doesn't change, then eventually, like, it will grow old after a couple of years. So it's always kind of both, like, I do, you know, I don't want to do this anymore, and I am also longing for something else. And I don't think I early on knew what that something else was, but having moved to the US before, I knew that there's a lot of opportunity, and you can't always know what life will throw your way, but you know, there'll be stuff. Like, another example, now I went to Gamescom. I didn't know like how that's gonna pan out, how that's gonna work out for my company, but I come home with two pages of different connections and people to talk to and to contact and see like how we can kind of help each other, so to say. So there's always a kind of urge and the hunger for more, but it's also the kind of restlessness from where you've been.
So I guess you can relate that also to the list of companies you've worked with, because we are kind of similar age. That means that, and your list of companies is longer than many people's. So, what I would like to know, or like what my guess would be, is that those stations or those like jobs were always focused on like a project basis, or like what do you always know going in that, oh, I will stay here for one project, 1 year, 2 years? Or did it always, was it different circumstances? Like, how did that list get so long?
I think that my goal is always to, you know, stay for a company long enough to make an impact, make an expression. And that is definitely shipping at least one project. So probably looking at something like 3 years to really feel like you've had like 2-3 years to really feel like you've accomplished something and you've done something. And when it comes to like why I have, you know, why I work for so many studios, I mean, I'm on my 15th year in my career, you know, and there's a bunch of these studios that I have worked for 2 years as well. There's a few of them where I didn't work out. For example, I worked at Capcom Vancouver for about 10 months because the studio closed down, you know, and we all lost our jobs. And then lately I've been more focused on my consultancy. So for example, I had a 6-month contract with Ubisoft, but that was just a 6-month contract. And it was always supposed to be like that. So it's been a mix, but if I could choose, I would definitely like look at least 3 years somewhere to be able to have an impact. And even more so, like, when you're at my level now, at director level, if I would take an employment, I would be there for the long run. I would be there for the long haul to kind of be there early on and help set the vision and drive that product through to both to shipping, but then also nurturing the community and beyond. So yeah, I think it's something that kind of grows a little bit with your career as well, that you, you know, to be able to have that impact, you want to be somewhere for a longer time.
Yeah. You mentioned it twice, I think. So we will go to that moment in time because I'm really, really curious how you got on TV in Sweden.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, I had okay. the same question, like from what, Burger King and gas station at 17 to TV on Sweden at 21?
Yeah, something like that. Okay, so the answer is DreamHack, actually. Because I got into esports in 2001. Like I was playing with my friends in the neighborhood, my local buddies on the same street. And then I found some online friends through Lunar Storm, which was an early kind of social media in Sweden. And we started a clan, and then I became just kind of active, and it was a pretty small scene, and we got on IRC and QuakeNet, which was the kind of big chatting network at the time that hasn't really been, I guess it's Discord doesn't even cut it, because these were like big public channels that every clan would have and everyone was just hanging around, and we had Soul Games. So I was really into that scene, and so I got linked that someone started a magazine of esports, of women or girls playing esports and in all different games. And it was called Femina Gaming. And I read her articles, and their English wasn't that great. And, you know, being a top student myself, I felt like I could help them and I wanted to help them. So I wrote them to be like, hey, you know, like it would be really good if you fix this a little bit and that, like, but I really like what you guys are doing. Please carry on, you know? And then, Kia, her name is Fanny, who was running it, she was insightful enough to reply me back and say, and she took that feedback really well and said, hey, would you like to help write for us? So I started just doing the coverage of their online cups. And then, but then later on, we went to DreamHack. And so the first time we were there was also the first time they had Expo Part, which we didn't know. So we thought we would just be like five computers in the crowd. But no, we were actually in our own little booth in the newly opened little mini Expo Part. And so very quickly, we all went to IKEA to get a couple of sheets and black sheets and to put on the walls and make it look a little bit better, at least. And then, you know, so we started organizing the LAN tournaments, a DreamHack, which is the kind of finale of our online cups. And we had teams from Spain and we had teams from Russia coming down to play our tournaments. And of course, the Swedish teams were very high quality as well. And then one day, you know, doing all this, there's a booth next to us in this expo part that is called Metro Technique. And so it's a magazine called Metro, which was a free magazine in the 2010s that they were giving out. And they're like, we're going to start a tech show they had a special part of it. You know, they had the sports part, they had a politics part, and then they had like the tech part. And the tech part said, hey, we are here to meet like the youth and the gamers, and we're going to start, you know, a TV show next in the fall. And we have some different segments about new gadgets and new phones and like tech career. And we would like to have something about gaming. Do you have anyone who could speak about games? And, you know, being the biggest nerd in the room, or I don't know, the organizing committee or whatever, like I was one of the people at this point, I was one of the people driving our whole thing. Everyone kind of pointed at me and they kind of forwarded these people to me, and they came to me and I'm like, yeah, sure. Why not? No problem. And so I, you know, on Wednesdays, I simply didn't go to my university classes, and I simply made a deal with the teacher to kind of catch up on things afterwards. And instead I just went to the recording studio and I would get my makeup done about 10. And I even remember like they put up like in the subway. I was riding the subway to get to this, and they actually put up like the promo pictures of the whole show. They put them up in the metro wagons. So I had a photo of myself with full makeup, in this wagon. And then I was sitting without makeup because the makeup was being done professionally when I got to the studio. So I wasn't supposed to have any makeup on before because they would just have to remove it. And so I was sitting there trying to hide my face while you could see my, you know, not showing people that I'm the same person who's kind of up there, which is kind of surreal. And then, yeah, no, I sat and got makeup. And then I synced the script that I had been writing for with the producer and also the woman that was kind of leading the whole thing as well, who was like kind of introing all the different segments and parts and who was, you know, the hostess of the show, so to say. And usually the day before I had synced what kind of graphics and moving videos and pictures or whatnot that I wanted. But I would always go into the kind of a production crew and give them a little bit more direction. Like this is final script. I'm going to say this. And then you guys show that. And sometimes I even had clips that they came to my apartment to film me when I was playing like Wii bowling or Wii, like, I don't even know, tennis or something like, I don't even remember. And then sometimes I had moving graphics about like World of Warcraft and I was speaking about different subjects. And then in the afternoon we had like the recording, which was like, 1 hour, please, no retakes, because it's pretty tight and we rented the studio kind of thing. And we just kind of went. And I was doing that for a good, like, 6 months or a year or something like that. And it was fun, but it was also, like, I was burning out. Like, I was working I was studying full-time, and I had an extra job as a programmer, and I had this. So I couldn't keep it up. I just couldn't. And this was the thing that actually didn't pay the bills. And, you know, I really needed to pay my bills at this point. So I couldn't. I only did one season, and I had it over to another guy called Bank Lemne, who did also a fantastic job.
Really?
Yeah. Oh, you know him. he's many years in GRTV, and now I think he worked a long time for Bandai Namco. I'm not
sure. Yes.
He's
that's
a really
what,
good
that's
guy.
How we connected. Yes.
Really cool guy.
Oh, funny. I didn't know that about him. That's funny.
There you go.
I haven't spoken to him in quite
He was
some
at Gamescom.
Jesus.
I didn't meet him either. Next time, Venke, we'll meet you, I promise. I'd love to.
Cool. That's funny. And again, games industry, small world.
Small world indeed.
And again, right place, right time, right? The Metro booth was next to your
Yes,
your
but you know what? Get yourself out there. Sooner or later, things are going to happen.
Yo, this is really crazy. I have to talk about this. So last week there was Gamescom, in case you haven't noticed yet, at least in the timeline that we're in currently. And I was there for the first time as a non-Twitch employee. I used to work for Twitch, right? So that was always like an easy game with Twitch. I knew kind of what I was doing. This time I was there as a documentary filmer. And so we went there and we had like one day we had a little photography job, you know, just kind of hustling, like starting the new game plus, you know, just a bit of a new thing. And then day two, we followed a guy that we're kind of filming a documentary about. And I had such a crazy, across all day, such a crazy right place, right time movie playing in my life. You know what I mean? Like, it was just like all the plans that I had made were like obsolete, basically made obsolete, usually very quickly by just things happening differently. But then we meet this guy here, that guy there. And then my buddy Paul was like, oh, I need to take the camera into my hand. I think there we need to film a little bit more B-roll in the evening or something. And then like a huge party erupts where we were. And it was just crazy. Just every half hour a situation that is like, how did we catch this, you know, on camera? How is this possible, right? Mystical stuff. And like feels very lucky. I don't know. I don't have a question. I just want to share this.
When life gives you lemons, you make lemonade. That's what I'm saying.
And sometimes it's just straight the box of chocolates, you know? It's not even like sour. It's just nice, you know? It's just like, okay, we're here. Cool shit's happening. Yeah, cool. I'll take it. How is it possible? I don't know. I'm not going to question it.
Yeah, that's pretty good. I'll tell you, I have another couple of let's go on a tangent, okay? Because I like tangents. Let's, you know, stay off the formula a little bit. So I
Which format?
After I shipped Batman Arkham Origins, I was working at Warner Brothers. We had some, since we had been working very hard, I'm not going to use the word, at the end to ship the game, we had some paid time off in to kind of made up for the time spent, our spare time spent to ship the game. And I happened to do my yearly catch up on ICQ, I think, or something like that. Yeah, you guys.
Wait, what?
Yeah, I don't even log into it. This is 10 years ago, okay? Come on.
I tried, because I still have it like in my head. Sometimes when somebody mentions ICQ, my mind goes 176370253.
158. Yeah,
terrifying. It's so insane how you, like, when you grew up in the time, like, my number, like, my ICQ handle number, you used to have a number. For that tool, so you needed to know that if you wanted to connect to people.
Yeah.
And I actually tried logging in because, I mean, that site still exists. I don't know if there's a client or anything, but I can't remember my password because it's not the one which I also had in mind.
I was able to log in the other day, man.
Wow. I wanted to see who's
like
on there.
250 people and they're all dead. And I'm like, who is this? I don't remember.
Trying to log in right now.
I was like,
yeah,
who are the people I was, like, Ultima Online people, some browser game people I used to be. And like, I need to understand what these people do now, all these years after. Maybe like some of them ended up working in games, I'm 100% sure. But I can't, like, and I don't have access to the email address.
Their nicknames and you don't know what their real names are.
Yeah, it's funny, yeah. Yeah, sorry.
You did the ICQ catch up 10 years ago, but that's still...
That's still late. That's still like 10 years after that. Yeah, I know. But anyway, I think it was ICQ. I did my yearly catch up anyway with this guy I used to play MMOs with back in even the days before that. So like in 2005, I played MMOs. You know, I played them a little bit too much. I became an alliance leader. I took over everything with my clan and my... And yeah, we killed the server because everyone was bored because they had no chance. Anyway, long story short, I still catch up with those people every now and then. And they live across Europe, basically. And this one guy, he was born in Czechoslovakia. And now he lives in Brno, which I think is in Czech Republic. And he said, I'm like, how are you doing, buddy? And it's just like old times, even though we haven't spoken for so many years, we get back into like, you know, how are you doing? It's like almost like therapy. You guys know, you guys have these friends, right? Good old friends.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah. And then he's like, oh yeah, I'm really good. Actually, I'm going to Japan. I'm like, oh, that's so cool. I always wanted to go to Japan, but I figured, you know, I'll do it in 10 years or so when maybe they know a little bit more English or I know some Japanese. And he's like, well, I know Japanese. I was there last year and it was fine. I'm like, oh, really cool. When are you going? And he's like, you know, he's like, oh, I'm going in October. I'm like, that's actually just after we shipped the game when I have my time off. I'm like, huh? He's like, you should come. I'm like, yeah, fuck it. And I'm, you know, every one of my friends will be like, I will say yes to that question 10 out of 10 times, you know, 100 out of 100 times. I'd be like, fuck yeah, let's go to Japan. Let's do it. There's no consideration needed in my life. And so said and done, I land and I can speak a very, very long time in Japan, but we're going to shortcut a little bit to, so that was coincidence number one. I'm talking to him just as going to Japan. Okay. Coincidence number two is Tokyo Game Show is happening during these 3 weeks when I will be in Japan. That's coincidence number two. Coincidence number three, as I'm walking the floor of Tokyo Game Show, I run into my best friend in Sweden, who I didn't even know was going to be there. So, you know, you just get yourself out there and take the opportunity to come to you, and you never know where it's going to lead you. Sometimes it will be to the Roppongi, I think, district, late night singing karaoke at some Japanese bar with the other expats and friends.
When it's with you, it always ends up in karaoke. That's what I understood already. So.
That's not even a coincidence anymore.
No, it's not.
Hey, did you have something, Flo?
I need to, this podcast, like this episode, but in general from now on, needs to be more cat focused in general, and I will explain why. But I wanted to ask, since we know about your cats, so we talked about them and
we heard them.
We heard them, and yes. So why this podcast needs to be more about cats is I am about to become a cat owner, cat dad. I don't know.
Oh, I'm so proud.
In about a month, if everything goes well, and I was always like, this is a complete like non-topic for the podcast, but you're here, so you will answer.
you will.
What do you do in your spontaneous life? Like, oh, I will go to Japan. Oh, I will just go to the airport and see what do you do with the cats? That's like my main concern is like, what about my cat?
So yes, if you only have one cat, you're pretty good, I would say. Like when I moved to the US, I didn't bring in my cat. I was happy to be able to keep my cat with a family member then because I was still in Sweden. After that, after, you know, like moving to Canada, that was no longer a thing. But I was able to find, you know, like I'm a person who likes having house parties, you know, I'm not sure if that's gotten through, but you know, I like bringing people together. I like parties. I thrive in these kind of situations where I have all my friends around me and we're doing cool and fun stuff and I can entertain them and whatever we're doing, if we're singing SingStar, if we're doing Guitar Hero, whatever. So all my friends had already met my cats. Mm-hmm. And some of them, I could kind of see who was spending more time in, you know, like with the cat in the bedroom and who was kind of hanging out downstairs. So I could kind of see who was like really fell in love with the cats, and they became the dedicated cat sitters. And the only bad thing, or not bad thing, the only sad thing for me is that they all fell in love so much after cat sitting that they got cats of their own. So my list of cat sitter kept shrinking, and I needed to always keep getting to know people. And actually now for Gamescom, I didn't have a cat sitter, so I just used my social networks in terms of broadcasting like cat photos. I'm like, does anyone want to... For 5 minutes, I got like 5 requests, you know, like, yes, we can take care of them. So I met with someone and I got the kind of vibe. I'm like, what's your experience with cats? You know, okay, you had them in the past, you know, like what would be the setup? Would they be with you? Would you live in my place? You know, like, do you seem like a trustable person? Do we have some friends in common? Nice. And so it's a little bit of, you know, I wouldn't say dating process, but there's definitely like a little process of meeting and feeling good about who you would ultimately hand, you know, your little darlings to. But it all worked out. And so I had a really good, you know, really nice lady called Olga who's staying in my apartment and taking care of them and looking after them, which is preferable because then they don't need, cats are very adaptable, yes. But it's always nice of them if you to change as few things as possible, so to say. So if they can be with a new person that they did meet before, though, but they can stay in their kind of old quad, then that's always better. But if you need to, you can also move them to another person. And they adapt really quickly. Like, you have no idea. They'll forget you in a day. I'm sorry. That's how it is.
Yes. So I will use this platform from now on to make friends for cat trading activities, as well as like this. If I, from now on, people of this world, if I meet you in like business meetings or whatever, I will befriend you. First of all, for like job connection and stuff, like not me wanting a job, but like business connections. And then the second part will always be about cats. So, these will be my two main talking points from now on, people. Just
Julian, trustworthy as ever, I would say, you know, no ulterior motive. Very
exactly.
Good.
Exactly. Yes. No personal connection whatsoever, like business, cats, and then I don't
know. Yeah.
Go home, please.
So, yeah, if you want to get, so what Florin is really saying, if you want to get to the heart of it, you want to be invited to every event, you want to be a speaker, whatever, you just got to volunteer to be a cat sitter. It's that easy, man. I'm just saying.
Nice.
Or be a great business person. Hello, Mr. Business, Mrs. Business Person. Hello. Speaking of which, I have a topic. I have a question. You told us in the very beginning of this wonderful conversation that with your own business that you are in the process of starting, ramping up, growing, you are kind of like having to look for a certain structure, or maybe a bit differently worded, you have to like identify what the structure is. And I thought maybe, you know, a bit towards the beginning of the end here, we can talk a little bit about this, about the now. I think it's very interesting my context for it is that I've been working a lot around what I would call something like natural creativity. So like, and having your own business, you know, we talked a little bit about the freedom, like kind of being your own woman, doing your own thing, maybe finding a bit of a business home. It's a little bit like having a flat share instead of, you know, your own place or something. And then there's that freedom there. And then there's also, you know, doing things the way you like. I'm doing this kind of too with my freelancing and creative endeavors. And I found out that it seems to be a lot about also letting things grow and just observing how things are and, you know, not trying to force so much. Well, that's just a little bit of context. And I'm curious how it is for you. You obviously have your contacts, your clients. Do you have goals right now? Do you have like lifestyle choices around which you want to build your business? How do you see that? How does that integrate with your life now?
Wow. So there's a lot there. I mean, my first goal is I have a revenue goal, and I have like I have one threshold where I want to be self-sustainable, and then I have one other threshold where I want to make this amount of money, be able to have this kind of lifestyle, travel this much, etc. So I have those kind of goals out there, and then the you know, the rest of it, honestly, it is a learning process, and you can only plan that much. Like I said, I stopped spending time to try to decide which customers would come to me, because what inevitably happened was that I kept contacting the right people, but maybe at the wrong time. Maybe they didn't have the budget, or maybe they didn't have the need, or maybe they didn't have the time. And then I realized I'm going to have to ping these people again because they're not going to remember me later, or they might not even realize that they have a problem, even though I hear from some other team on the product that they do. So to say, so I stopped. In the beginning, I thought I could just work out of my network and this would be great. And then that didn't fully happen. So I learned how to instead just focus on my outreach and my social media and being visible. And what I noticed is that's way more effective than companies coming to me. I also realized not to sweat the small stuff and just kind of keep moving forward and focusing on always getting new clients, so to say. And because my energy is like a really big factor for anyone who's an entrepreneur. Like, what can I spend my energy and my effort on? And I need to make sure that it's always looking to doing productive things that pushes me forward. So for example, that's why I said, like, don't sweat the small stuff, and kind of finding always keeping that kind of positive energy forward. And, you know, like, there's the amounts of hours on the day is one thing that, you know, in theory could limit how much I work. But that's only, you know, I can only crunch that many days in a row. Like, what I also learned is to handle my energy in a way on where am I most productive. And I'm going to give an example. Like,
yeah,
honestly, I don't get shit done between like noon and 4 p.m. It's really like, I mean, some days I do, but some days I just don't. And you know what? I look at my cats. They sleep between 10 and 4. I'm right. Yeah. Babies, you know what? This is a sign. I'm just saying, you know, like in Spain, they got siesta on me. So I learned that when I wake up, I'm actually hyperactive and I get a lot of shit done, and I need to, like, I sorted everything, all the different equations and whatnot, problems or things that I was challenges. I solved them during the night in my head, and I just need to write everything down because my head is moving so quickly, and I need to just like mark all these amazing things down that I came to think about. And then, you know, I do that for a bit, but then it kind of slows down. And then later on in the evening, I get really productive again, actually. And especially, you know, like with some synthwave music, maybe some dinner and a glass of wine, you know, I'm getting in the zone, I'm doing my shit. So I've learned kind of to, and this is something you can't do when you're working for a company, but I've learned to really learn my energy flow and try to really capitalize on that in the best way possible. I'm not sure that aligns with you, but it sounds like it does.
Yeah, it does, because that is kind of like your natural rhythm, right? Like, that was the parts that I'm also curious about. I think that's one of the key things, you know, how to manage your time. I'm the same. I think it's objectively illegal to work between 12 and 4. Unless, of course, it's like talking. I can talk to people, but I can't like sit down and focus. That's impossible. So that's definitely something that developed for me as well, like kind of this rhythm, you know. And it's so, I think it's so great. I'm like, it's almost like, yeah, it's like you observe an animal, right? And you can kind of like see, oh, at this time it sleeps, you know. And if you talk like that about yourself, you can be like, at this time Simon or Marie can't take any meetings, unfortunately, you know, or can't, you know, because here the time is blocked for that work, or here we have to take a walk or something. And that it's like a, yeah, it feels a bit more artistic, you know. I know this book about daily rhythms, you know, I think it's called Daily Rituals, Mason Curry or something. And it's very interesting. It describes all these day routines, day, you know, the day is a cool unit to observe because it has a repetitive thing to it. And so about at which time, like Immanuel Kant or like, I don't know if there's Beethoven in there or somebody, or some more modern people too, like just live their day. And it's the craziest book to read because you realize that many people who were doing like notable things in the world had the craziest rhythms, and, you know, like housekeepers or like people to support them around them. And there is no 9-to-5 unless the people choose it. And I think it's a bit underrated in this world.
Yeah. You know, like I read a quote on Facebook the other day and it said like this: when you're an adult, you can actually eat chocolate for breakfast and there's literally no one policing this. And it's a little bit similar, I feel like, having your own company. Like, don't get me wrong, I have a lot of shit to do. Until I do these, I'm not getting paid, okay? That being said, if I really feel like, if I don't, you know, have, you know, I've limited myself to 3 meetings per day, for example, because to give enough quality and give enough follow-up and stuff and structure to them, that's what I need. And so if I'm able to schedule to take an afternoon, I just take the afternoon off. And there's no boss to ask, to question, you know, nothing. Maybe I'll need to work a little bit later on in the evening, but like, there's no one who's going to be like, you just left work and didn't come back. What the fuck? You know, like, you literally have the kind of freedom and flexibility. And you mean, all in all, I do work longer hours than what I did before, but that kind of flexibility to really adapt to, like we mentioned, when I can be the most productive is really helping my life and my creativity and my energy and my productivity and everything right now. And I kind of wish that I've realized this about myself sooner, but before this I just thought something was wrong with me, more or less, but now I realize that no, actually I'm okay.
I think you are okay.
Yeah, so people can find you on Twitch. Do you stream often still? Do you even have the time?
No, I don't have the time now. I gotta. Yeah. It doesn't pay nearly as much as other activities that I could use with my knowledge at this point. I do enjoy it, but I try to focus on hosting instead. So, for example, I'll be hosting an esports conference later this year, and I'm going to go speak to a couple of other game conferences as well. So that's kind of where I'm putting the presentation energy, so to say. Mm-hmm. But I do still love it. It is a lot of fun. And you can find me on Twitter at MajorWall. You probably see, if you listen to this, you probably see my name somewhere. Or same name on LinkedIn. You know, please add me. You know, please write me a note if you thought you had a good time, if you listened to this episode. I always looking for ways to expand my network and get to know new people, old people, everyone. So, yeah, please reach out.
Very nice. Then let's take it as the beginning of the wrap up here, which we will not do without a cool list of questions that we have.
Oh shit!
It's not time to say "oh" just yet.
Bracing myself.
We have some essential questions for you. They are short and sweet, but not necessarily simple. So, are you ready?
Promising that my answers will be short and sweet, by the way, but with that disclaimer, I'm ready.
We have some time. No, that's fine. You do it as you like. Okay? So the first question of the day is, what inspires you?
So many things. Like, I'm inspired by people who want to make a change. Like, the same way as I did, you know, started with esports, just started making these tournaments out of nothing, really. Like, people who want to change the world, and they take initiative in doing so, and not just wish, they actually do action. Like, just a couple of years ago, I went to, I was in Portugal on vacation, and there was Fridays for the Future climate parade going on. So I jumped straight in, you know, and I care a lot about a couple of social issues. I care a lot about the climate and the environment. I care a lot about the animals of the world, and I do care about the kind of LGBT scene, and try to always making sure that they can get like a fair life on equal terms and feel safe and that kind of stuff. So I inspire people who are driving the change, I'd say.
Sweet. What would you say is the purpose of your being?
I think that's changed over the course of the life. And I, you know, I'm always almost tempted to throw back something philosophical at you, but I...
Please do.
So, you know, do we have to have a purpose, you know, or is that inherently a selfish thought?
Nice.
My answer would be that it's more, maybe yes, maybe no, definitely. And then it's a way to, I would say, observe yourself, just like I mentioned earlier, you know, here she is doing that. You know, why? You know, kind of this curious lens. So, no, I guess we don't have to, but if we choose to, we can look at us this way, ourselves this way.
I think I've heard recently that it's a very millennial thing, supposedly, to want to have an impact. And that's something that's kind of drove with me. Like, I've more or less decided, I'm not going to get kids, because it's not good for the environment. And there are, like, you know, I can add so much for students, for example, or someone who's been beginning of the career, mid in a career, and I don't, you know, raising babies is something that other people are better on than I. And I don't have this natural urge to. My lineage need to continue, which is the purpose for a lot of people, I'd say. Mm-hmm. And even I wouldn't call them selfish. I think that's a really natural way of feeling and preservation. I think that's, you know, survival is the most basic motivation we have. But for me, like, I'm looking at what can I give to other people? You know, how many people did I help in my lifetime? How many people did I unlock? How many people did I inspire? How many doors did I open for other people? And, like, all in all, like, what good did I give to the world? And that's one of them. And the other one is I wouldn't call it purpose, but my personal strive is to, you know, see a lot of cultures and become a really wise and tolerable and understanding person. I think that's my kind of little personal goal in life, so to say.
Sweet. What is a beautiful day to you?
It also has a lot of aspects to it, you know. I could say a beautiful day is when I got shit done and I felt happy, you know, happy about it, but that rarely happens anymore, because when I worked at a job, you would get the kind of external validation, and you would kind of plan your work, and you were able to complete that scope, and you were good. But when you're working in your own company, you know, you can never work enough kind of thing. There's always more stuff you can do. So I wouldn't say that anymore, but I would say a beautiful day for me is probably when I get some more perspective on life. And so I do a lot of backpacking. Like, I'm the kind of person who would just, you know, take my backpack and go to an airport, go to a train station, and just kind of figure out my destination from there and kind of let the adventure lead me, so to say. And so for me, one of the best things is when I get out of my comfort zone, I go someplace where I haven't really been, I'm sitting there looking at the landscape, and you know what? I'm not thinking about my meetings tomorrow. I'm not thinking about my rent. I'm not thinking about all these social things that I need to do. Like, I'm just there enjoying nature, you know. And for once in my life, I'm finally sitting there and looking in the moment and not just living in the future. I'm actually living in the moment. I'm taking in the smells. I'm feeling the surface of things. I'm feeling the temperature and the wind in my face. And I'm getting a little bit perspective to these things, as you say, a little bit life and purpose and where I am and where I want to go and why. And I just kind of, you know, just enjoying the moment and the day and the world that we live in while we still can.
If you would start a new safe game in your life right now, what occupation would your new character have, if that makes sense?
Oh, man. So here's a very less known fact about me. I think that anyone who's not a lot of people kind of know this, but I have 127 dresses, and the last one I actually made myself. To be more sustainable, I stopped the consumerism, and so I don't really buy them anymore, but sometimes I make them, but not that often. And I try to repair all my clothes, but I would definitely have been a fashion designer. And actually, in 2010, I programmed a Windows application that was supposed to be able to export it to my phone, which I never did, where you can pick your own wardrobe. And it has all these filters, collections, different ways to tag and mark, and yeah, so many different functionalities. And I kind of saw before me that, you know, I could do something at it, because there was a lot of people requesting this. I used to hand it around on a USB memory to my friends. And I saw that I could make this a career, but I didn't want to, because I wanted to be in games. But, you know, I don't regret my career in games, but if I could have two lives, then I would definitely get into be a fashion designer. 100%.
Maybe you still can.
Maybe I still can. I actually met Lars Wallin, which is Sweden's most famous designer, last year when he was here in Berlin, and it was the Swedish embassy. I love the Swedish embassy. I was there yesterday, actually voting, and they matched me. So I got some intel from him, like Sweden's most famous designer. Sorry. How can I do if I want to change my career? What do I do? And he's like, first you do like a course in like to be a seamstress, and then you do this kind of other like designer pattern making course. And I'm like, I just took some notes and I'm like, oh my God, this is a long path. Maybe one day I will, but maybe I won't. I don't know. But meanwhile, I will just keep making my clothes in spare time every now and then, and we'll see what it leads to.
That's a bit like the full circle conversation to the conversation you had at the guy at university, right? The game designer or
yeah, Mikael Kalms.
The same thing.
It's a little bit, yeah, going fine. And I think a lot of people are like that, you know, like, because again, when you get into the industry, you have all these talents and you need to focus on a couple of them that, you know, will actually be beneficial to the studio and job and role that you need to fill. But what about these other talents? And so for me, the artistic talent I will get through making my synthwave art or listening to synthwave music. You know, my presentation has been this TV show and all this hosting and stuff. And so I guess like my clothes fashion has been like making my own clothes and buying all these dresses and stuff. And so I think it's just important no matter who you are, to find different ways to express yourself and your creativity and nurture those and make sure that you get stimulated in everything that really matters to you and gives you energy and feeds your passion.
Yes, and life is long. Many things are possible. I have one last question, then Florian takes over. Do you read books, and do you have books that you like often recommend or like to give to people, books that have inspired you, one, two, maybe three?
I have a lot of books in my bookcase and books that inspired me, but I wouldn't say that I give this a book that I give to everyone, because I think everyone is in a different situation in life and they have they're in different stages of their mental journey and they have different needs on where they want to go and what they want to learn. So a couple of books I have recommended to other people. I have one about neurodiversity that I gave to someone who really helped them to understand themselves a little bit. And today they are diagnosed with ADHD, which really helped them. I have another one called Crucial Conversations that I give to some people.
Sorry,
who are...
do you want to say the name of the neurodivergent?
It's a Swedish book, and it's called 2E, so twice exceptional. It's called like twice exceptional, and it's only available in Swedish, sadly. And it came, I think, a year or two ago, and it just kind of speaks about people who are so talented at doing a thing, but then they can struggle socially, for example. And so it kind of goes into a lot about neurodiversity. And some people need that. And another one I do for people who are, you know, like midway in a career, like maybe when they become senior sometimes, is Crucial Conversation. And it's one that helps you to align expectations and align kind of decisions with your team and build understanding and build a kind of common pool of understanding and information about things. And then I have another
Crucial
one.
Crucial Conversations by Carrie Patterson. I see.
Yeah, that might be. It's a red book cover.
Yeah.
I can't reach my bookcase from here.
No,
I have another
fine.
One about body language that I find is really, really useful. And I need to keep reading this pretty often to kind of do that. And then there's a bunch of leadership books. It's just called Body Language. Give me a second. I'll get it.
Body language. I'm curious about this.
So we actually need to start a video podcast as well to get the body language in.
Yeah. Maybe that's a 2023 thing.
Foreshadowing?
Maybe. Is this going to be cut or is this going to be in?
Okay. It's called Knack. Knack, Make It Easy, Body Language. Techniques on interpreting nonverbal cues in the world and workplace.
How do we spell Knack? Knack.
K-N-A-C-K. Knack.
Knack body language.
So it helps you to read the room and read the mood of the people that you're talking to.
Okay, nice.
So that's
I can't
good.
Find it. Does it have an author?
Yeah. Aaron or Aaron, A-A-R-O-N, and then Brehav, B-R-E-H-O-V-E.
A-Aaron.
Yeah, two A's.
Knack body language, here we go. Yeah, okay,
there
cool,
you go.
Cool, cool. Yeah, thank you.
So that one's really useful. There's a couple of design ones that, you know, like that one that comes to mind is Made to Stick, which is by Chip Heath and Dan Heath.
These guys are crazy. They are so
smart. Why Some Ideas Survive and Others Die. It's a pretty good mind opener for anyone who's trying to, you know, pitch a game or a new idea or a business venture. And then one that I give to women sometimes, you know, when inevitably I see them, sadly, inevitably, I see them coming to different points in their career. It's a New York bestseller in Wall Street Journal and Business Week. And it's called Nice Girls Don't Get the Corner Office 101. Unconscious mistakes that women make to sabotage their careers. And I don't kind of agree anymore that it's all on the women to do these mistakes. I think a lot of the structures are just not out there for corporations, are just not made for women at all. And so women need to reprogram their brains, and not all women, but many of them need to reprogram their brains to kind of adapt and survive and understand how to thrive in these corporate environments. And this, what this book helps doing is to kind of put the limelight on the kind of differences in mindset, and that can kind of help people be a little bit more aware on how they, why things are going and the way they're going and how they're being interpreted and all that kind of stuff. So it's things that are good to be aware of, I'd say. And so, like I said, depending on the person, it'll be a different recommendation. There's also a couple of other leadership books, but I kind of feel that leadership books tend, even this one I just mentioned, they tend to get out of date.
Mm-hmm.
Every 5, maybe 10 years, they're just not as relevant anymore. Very few actually made it this far, I'd say. And the ones that survive the longest are the ones who are usually around emotional intelligence.
Mm. All right. So from one list to the next, what are your favorite games? Also, the top three.
Which genre?
There is no counter questions in this part.
Isn't this my episode? Don't I get to call the shots here?
Well, you choose what you like.
You gotta give me like a console and an era and a genre. You gotta give me something because like I play everything except for golf simulators and golf and flight simulators. That's the only two game types that I don't play.
What about mini golf simulators?
I used to play this mini golf game on the web actually back in the days. And in ICQ, they also had ICQ was really good. They had a lot of web games that you could play with your buddies. You know, I'm just saying. That was pretty good.
Yes, but we are getting.
There's also a billiard game, you know, in Famicom, like NES, 8 days, you know, back in the days. An 8-ball game is pretty good. Just saying.
Yeah. So we will.
I can tell you about my most played games.
We will do this. Right? We will do favorite game of the 80s.
80s?
Yes.
Man, that's hard.
You wanted a challenge.
Man. Yeah. I don't want to say Super Mario because it's so standard. What else would I say that's like from the 80s? I mean, there's so many of them. I really like Gradius, I'd say, but I wouldn't say that's a favorite game either. I almost tempted to check out my game collection that I can't reach, but those games are mostly in the 90s. So what else from the 80s? I really liked, oh man, there's so many. I liked Track and Field. I liked Circus Charlie. That's from the 90s as well. The OG Super Mario and Ice Climbers come to mind. Mm. When was Prince of Persia released again? That was on PC. Yeah, that's later on, like the original Prince of Persia, I think. I gotta check this out. Was it from the 80s? I really like that game. 89! First release! Made it! OG Prince of Persia was a great game.
What was your favorite game that you worked on?
Ah, shit. Released or not released?
If it's not released, maybe you are already also not allowed to talk about it. So I don't know. Whichever one is you can tell us about.
Okay. It's probably Batman Arkham Origins. And the reason why is because I got to... I mean, obviously, I was a big fan of the Batman franchise, like already established. But I got to work on the first boss, Killer Croc. And he was really cool. Big old crocodile in his fight. And I got to work on it with a lot of really good people who are really good friends today. And so I hold it very dearly for the kind of experience on what I learned and kind of how I grew from it, I'd say.
All right. And the final game then, what's your favorite game with a female lead character?
Oni.
There you go. That's the special Marie edition of your favorite games presented by my imagination. Who is somebody from the games industry who you would like to get to know?
I feel like there's a lot of people, but then there's a lot of people that I also met. Who's left? I would probably say Jade Raymond. Like I don't know her, but I worked in Montreal, so I know of her and obviously probably have a lot of common acquaintances, but I feel like she's been able to kind of master and rise and thrive around the higher echelons of corporate, and I'm kind of dying to learn how she did it or what she learned or what she saw, you know, like I wish that I could. I don't want to, you know, make her journey, but I would love to kind of learn from her and see, how she grown, so to say. That would be super, super fascinating.
Nice. Our challenge now, which is always what comes after this, the big reveal.
There's more. What reveal?
Yes. Which is that we will try to somehow connect you. I'm not sure if our chances are bigger than yours.
Oh, wow.
In that, but Games Net Berlin Europe, to plug the project, is about connecting people. So,
okay.
Yeah, we have a backlog of challenges because people always choose very inspiring people, of course, and then it's not too hard to reach them, but it is now on our to-do list to connect you.
Yeah, well, you got to go over to North America. You guys are based in Europe, so
I'm sure. Yeah, we have to found like a little, like a very mini conference, Florian, now. Like I was about to text you this and maybe we can talk about it later, but I really see this in the future that, you know, not just connecting these people individually, but connecting this whole cast of this cinematic podcast universe. Dun, dun, dun. But this is just, cut this, you know, these are trade secrets.
Oh, yes.
No. I spill my beans. Now you guys spill your beans. Come on.
Okay.
All right, but we also get one back from you in return, so there's nothing wrong with the price.
I get to ask questions.
Who is someone you know who you think we should have on this podcast?
I have many favorite people, but two that I met. Can I say two people?
Yeah, one person from the
80s. You know what? This is my episode. I call the shot. I'm going to say two people. I'd say Celia Hodent, amazing advocate for UX. She was the UX director on Fortnite for Epic, and she also runs her own show, and she's very inspiring. And then Fauci, I would say as well, Mesmer, who's an industry icon too. And he actually comes by Berlin every now and then because he now works as a kind of one of the creative officers at Ubisoft HQ, and so he cares about all the Ubi studios, or at least a bunch of Ubi studios. So he comes to Berlin every now and then. So maybe you guys can convince him to go to some event or get on the show.
And he also is a co-host of a podcast together with Rami Ismail.
Correct.
The Habibis. Yes, which was who was our first podcast guest. When we started this podcast.
Know.
So, yes, we can try and connect with Fauzi and see and get him on as well as Celia Hodent.
There you go.
Last question. Where can people find you? Where can people?
Sure. No, I can mention before, please do connect. I always love to hear from people. I love to hearing your stories, your interests. And, you know, if I can open a door for you, let me know. People open doors for me in my career. So, you know, I'm happy to try to do it whenever it makes sense. And find me on LinkedIn, Marie Majorwal, or find me on Twitter at Majorwal. And I'm very approachable. My name is unique, so if you find someone with that name, it's me. So, you know, you'll be sure to get in touch.
Very nice. And would you like to ask us a question?
Dun, 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 dun. Man, I wish I got to prepare a little bit more. Okay, so what is your dream guest on the show?
Florian, this one's for you. Maybe I have one. I think one person that I've been interested in also through the documentary we're working on, Purpose of Gaming, is Tim Zoret, who is the director of The Last Night, founder of Odd Tales Games.
Mm.
I think he has a very philosophical and artistic approach to what he does, and talks about AI, ego, very interesting things. And he is like kind of on our list for Purpose of Gaming. So I don't know him. So, and he's in Europe. So he qualifies, I think. That would be cool.
So I will just say somebody I don't know, but I know who he is. And I always like wondered what's going on with him. Like what drives him at this point, like who he is, because he's become kind of controversial in a little sense, is I would like to have Notch on the podcast.
Notch. Nice. Also European.
I felt that coming when you were like, a little bit controversial. I'm like, yes.
Yeah
because we can't always have the like easy guests. We also need the spicy guests. Yeah.
So turn around for you then. I've actually met him. I have his phone number.
Still. Is that so? Okay. That's
we'll see. We'll see what happens after the show. No promises.
This podcast could get even more interesting. Very interesting. Dun, dun, dun. Cool. Well, thank you for your questions. Yes. At all? Do you have another one?
Thank you.
One last one, if you want to. Any question?
She gets another one?
Oh, I got another one?
It's Marie Majorwell. If she wants to.
Yeah, me, the only one. Oh, shit. When's the next party, man?
When's the next party, man? The next party, man, is in 15 days.
Right.
We are recording this on September 1st, 2022, and the next party will be cool. Our summer reception on September 16th.
And will there be karaoke?
We can have start a side event, kind of. There's still 2 weeks left, so we can like, yeah, we need interested people. We need some tech. We can make it work. I don't know.
All right, you guys heard that? That was a promise, right? Cool. I'm looking forward to it.
Well, we need somebody to host it.
I actually know a very motivated karaoke expert, gaming expert living in Berlin. I know you've heard of her, a very smart woman, Marie Majorwell. Yeah. Okay.
And the background chat, our editor Anna is saying, I will arrange it. So I'm scared. I'm scared.
I'm excited. All right, let's do it.
Okay, let's do it and let's wrap it up. Thank you. Great conversation. Very fun. Very new experience here in the end. Yeah, thanks for being on, Marie. It was a good chat. We filled the 2 hours. Let's go.
Yeah, it was a pleasure, guys. Always fun talking to you. And actually, I appreciate how you're bringing out a couple of other topics from what I usually talk about. So, and I hope all your listeners enjoyed as well. If you're still here, thank you so much for reaching this point. And don't forget to follow me, but you also should follow these guys on social media.
Thank you, everybody.
Goodbye.
Bye-bye.
Hi there, Simon here. Thanks for listening to this episode. If you like what you hear here and you would like to hear more here, feel free to follow or to subscribe to the podcast on whichever platform you get your audio fix. We appreciate you and we promise you to bring you many more insightful conversations with fantastic games industry guests from Berlin and from all over Europe. Thank you very much and see you very soon. Bye bye.
Hi there. Before you go, this is Florian, project manager for GamesNet Berlin Europe. If you want to stay connected to the network, find out more about upcoming events and links to other MediaNet initiatives, you can visit us at gamesnetberlin.eu and subscribe to our newsletter. Thank you so much for listening to our podcast and until next time.